You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
And now for the rose among the thorns when we're looking at the conversations we're having today regarding success in business. This next guest is a woman who has started, founded and run a 300 billion rand asset manager in South Africa, building it from scratch with nothing but her intellect, intuition, and a whole lot of courage. I'm joined on the line by the founder and CEO of Signia Asset Management, Magda Virzyska, to take a look at her journey through business and understand how she got to where she is today. Good evening, Magda. Thanks so much for taking the time. A young Girls High scholar from Pretoria Girls High, did she ever dream that she was going to change the world?
I haven't quite changed the world, but no, the answer is not. Look, you know, when I was at Girls High, we've just arrived in South Africa. I didn't speak any English. So I think I was just concentrating on trying to learn English and Afrikaans. I didn't get an exemption from Afrikaans and pass exams. And then, you know, the main focus was how do I fund my studies, because my parents came here with nothing. So there was no money for me to study at university. So I was much more focused on how do I get the money to study at university than I was on my, you know, future career in business.
So speaking of gathering monies, how does Signia then come about in November of 2006? I mean, you've gone through high school, you've gone through the studies at tertiary, you've worked through Coronation. Mm-hmm. What happens in November of 2006 that says to you, this is the business I need to be going into?
So I think it's a journey that started a little bit earlier, which is, you know, I finished my actuarial science degree. I had no idea what I studied. I had a bursary for that. And I was then obliged to work at Southern Life for 4 years, since the bursary ran for 4 years. And, you know, within 6 months, I knew that actuarial science wasn't for me. One, I mean, it was deadly dull. Two, I was surrounded by people much brighter than me. So then I wangled my way into the asset management division of Southern Life. And then, you know, hop skipped from that to a very brief stint at Alexander Forbes as investment consultant, and then landed up at Coronation Fund Managers, which then was a startup. So really there was, you know, five people and a dog. And I think my office was a cupboard. It was me and I was, you know, sharing my office with printing paper. And then, you know, I got very involved in building Coronation. And through that, you know, I've always been a believer in learn as much as you can. So, you know, I had a very fortunate start, because at Coronation, I literally could do everything from administration to marketing to being the legal person, to being the client relationship manager. So, you know, I acquired all these skills. And then Coronation listed 6.5 years later on the JSE. And, you know, there's a long story to who got shares, who didn't get shares, who was the owner. So I resigned. And after my experience at Coronation, I decided that there is no way I'm going to work for another man again. So literally, you know, walking out of Coronation, a little bit of adrenaline that drove me all the way to home. And then I went, what the hell have I done resigning from Coronation? But literally 2 days later, I was at lawyer's offices registering my own company. So I had a company, but, you know, I didn't have any staff. I didn't have any capital backing me. And that wasn't Signia yet. This is 2003. I had no capital backing me, you know, and literally I had to take out a bond in order to finance a little office. But within 6 months, you know, the most interesting part of my career was a personality that featured large in the media then, Mziko Malo. And he spent 13 years on Robben Island with Nelson Mandela, was released and made a lot of money very quickly from some, you know, interesting BE deals. But anyway, he bought a company called African Harvest Fund Managers, and he needed someone to run it, approached me and said to me, Magda, you've got a business, I've got a business, let's make a deal. Of course, I didn't have a business, I had a small office. But I thought he had a business, which he didn't. It was a semi-bankrupt company. So anyway, I took over very quickly. African Harvest, 3 years. 3 years later, Nzi found me and said, Magda, I've recovered my money, sell that business. So I landed, I mean, literally, he says, you've got 2 weeks to sell the business. And I've never done a corporate transaction in my life. But I learned quickly on the job. So we sold African Harvest very quickly to Cadies, which doesn't exist today. Lots of lessons in that. And that's why I landed up with a bit of money. And At the same time as I was selling Cadies, a group of my employees came to me and said, Magda, what are we all doing next? And I said, well, who is we? And they said to me, well, here's a list of those of us who do not want to be sold to Cadies who want to come with you. And of course, you know, I didn't have a plan. And there wasn't a vision of Signia in my mind. But I had all these people staring at me. So the next thing that, you know, I remember doing is renting some offices at the waterfront. I could take, I think, 6 or 7 people. I couldn't take everybody. And we sat around the boardroom table and said, I said to the guys, okay, where is our business plan? We don't have one. So what are we all doing? You know, and that's really how Signia was born. And, you know, we put up a whiteboard and I said to everyone, guys, we can't imitate. I mean, all we know is financial services. That's all we know. But we can't imitate other people because, you know, if we start imitating a Coronation, Investec then, or an Old Mutual, you know, there are always bigger guys in town who will eat us up. So we need to innovate. And really the concept of innovation was, okay, asset management, but how do we differentiate? And that was, you know, low fees, transparency, no jargon. I banned the use of any investment jargon when we talk to clients. You know, and that's really where we started. And technology. We had one genius, software genius, in the room with us and who still works for Signia today. And we pointed to him and said, okay, you develop an admin system for us. I am going to go off and hunt for clients and you guys set up ops. And really, this is how we started. And then, you know, attracted institutional investors. You know, largely actually initially because of administration systems that we've built ourselves and then asset management, particularly as index tracking. I mean, it was all about passive management. And that was the start of Signia.
Magda, you said something quite interesting around not working for another man. And being the person that you are, being the strong-willed person that some people might not know you to be, I want to get your thoughts around some of those challenges that you particularly faced, whether it was because you were a female, whether it was because you were in a male-dominated industry, some of those challenges that might not have been there, but that were unique to you in your journey.
I think the unique part was actually starting this journey when I was very young and in an asset management company. And, you know, the feature of an asset management company is that there's a lot of money swirling around. There are bonus pools. There are very large bonuses being paid. And, you know, as I have learned in life, money brings out the ugliest side of human nature. I've seen people do anything for money. So in an environment like asset management industry, where there is a defined bonus pool, so every cent that someone else gets is a cent you're not getting, you know, that's an industry that creates, doesn't necessarily attract, but creates a lot of aggression and a lot of fighting. People spend an enormous amount of effort on trying to maximize their bonuses. So that's why it's an environment that doesn't necessarily attract women. And I have worked with women before in asset management, and women who have worked for me, and they would quit. And every single time I would ask, well, why are you leaving? And the answer would be uniformly the same. Magda, who needs this rubbish, crap? Who needs this aggression? You know, women are intuitively collaborative. You know, women, and that has been my experience, women don't want to fight each other, despite teenage girls' battles. You know, women do want to work together in a kind of teamwork setting. So women were actively opting out of asset management. And consequently, you know, I landed up in an environment which is, you know, this common phrase of male dominated, but that is wild. It is male dominated and it remains male dominated today. You know, so, you know, my personality was, I don't think it was so much driven by, you know, I have some unique qualities which enable me to work in a male-dominated industry. It was more about the fact that, you know, I was a refugee and there's certain, you know, baggage that comes with being a refugee and not dissimilar to a lot of people, you know, in South Africa with this concept of black tax. If you lift yourself up, you're carrying your family with you in terms of having to support a lot of family members, which I ended up doing. Even family members in Poland. And as a consequence, you know, you view your job as something that you have to do because you don't have a choice. There are other people that rely on you doing what you're doing. So, you know, when I started working at Coronation, male industry notwithstanding, we obviously paid, you know, very comfortable salaries and bonuses. So I never viewed myself as having an option or the luxury of opting out of that job. And hence I had to adapt. And, you know, I always talk about this concept of, and I'm quite sure that, you know, psychologists really frown upon it, but, you know, I call it because it's dissociation. But really, whenever I'm in a boardroom or a meeting and with a lot of, you know, men voicing their opinions in whatever way they choose to, you know, I imagine myself as being in a perspex box. So any comments that are thrown at me, I kind of look at them and go, okay, let me imagine a frog hitting my perspex box and sliding down. And that means, you know, I never get upset. I never get emotional in a meeting. And I think that that is what, you know, kind of enabled me to survive. And then, you know, this concept of not working for, maybe, you know, saying for another man is a harsh one. It's basically coming out and saying, not working for another person. I want to be able to make my own decisions, my own choices, be accountable for that, and obviously not be told what to do by anybody.
If you're just tuning in, we're in conversation with the founder and CEO of Signia Asset Management, Magda Virzyska, around her business journey and how she's found success in the business landscape. Magda, it's very clear that being headstrong, being courageous and being brave is what's gotten you to where you are at this point. And along that journey, you've had to make some seriously tough decisions. And I want to look at just one of those decisions in isolation. And that was an unorthodox decision to almost be the whistleblower to what we now today know as the Gupta leaks, to sit in a position where you don't need to provide this information to the public. You don't need to share what you've found out along your business journey. But you take that decision anyway, that brave decision to release information that could potentially alter your life. And it does.
Maybe, you know, rewind a little bit back before the Gupta leaks, because there's, you know, a little bit of a background to that. And that was, you know, obviously the years of state capture. And being on the investment side, I could see what was happening and how the politics were influencing the economy. The economy was spiraling downwards. And, you know, I started speaking out against state capture, obviously expecting other CEOs, business leaders to be there alongside me. But they were not. I suddenly looked at, you know, looked left, looked right, and I was the only person speaking out. But at the same time, you know, apart from speaking out, I also call myself, I think I'm going to trademark this, I call myself a bit of a forensic ferret. So I stumbled across, you know, a couple of companies, NetOne being one of them, where you suddenly start looking at white collar crime and corruption, which I have always had a fascination with. And it was through this that I encountered the real heroes of the story. And that's not me. It's people who came into possession of information and had the bravery to take that information and want to do something with it. And that wasn't really me. You know, there were people behind, there are people always, there are, you know, people behind the story. So I wasn't the one that, you know, ferreted out Gupta leaks. But I came into possession of Gupta leaks, again, through the bravery of other people. And then when I looked at the information, and obviously there were about, you know, 500,000 emails, and sometimes you make decisions off the cuff, and then you look back and you go, what on earth have I done? But, you know, I came into possession of this information. And very quickly, I realized significance, consulted lawyers who said to me, Magda, two things, get yourself out of South Africa as quickly as possible, because, you know, it won't take the Guptas long to figure out that the information is out there, and to release it, democratize the information, because that's the protection you will have. So, you know, I took the information, my 500,000 emails, flew to London, booked myself into a hotel, and I think I spent, I can't remember if it was 7 or 10 days, I never left the hotel room. Literally, I went through 500,000 emails one by one A lot of them were guns, to be clear, between the various Guptas and various people they were paying off and various institutions and advisors and audit firms. And I categorized them into folders. And I made up a folder on Eskom. And there was one on Transnet. And there was one on a few other figures. But I literally had these folders. And then now I had to, so deleted the rest of the emails, kept the folders, and now I had to democratize the information. So this was ridiculous. You know, I was still kind of very much under legal advice. I went off and I bought rubber gloves. I was going to, no one's going to see my fingerprints on these drives. I bought these drives. I copied my folders onto it and then got names of whoever I could think of, plastered them onto envelopes, shoved these things into, you know, the different drives into different envelopes anonymously, and couriered them out to the world. And this is really how, you know, newspaper, I mean, to Sunday Times. Sunday Times was the first one to get hold of those folders. And, you know, they obviously didn't know I was behind it. But, oh my gosh, isn't this manna from heaven? They didn't really have to work that hard on the stories. The stories were there in folders. And so they splashed it out over all the, you know, over the newspapers and headlines. And I just looked at it and went, well, that's my protection mechanism. The information is out there.
It's always nice when someone has a bit of a perfectionist tendency within them. It always works out in the end. Magda, looking at your business now, looking at the 350 billion rands under management that Signia holds and the business that's built, how do you define your success in business today? What does that look like for you?
It looks like being able to employ people that I really like and be part of their story. So, you know, rather than looking at myself, because look, there's only so much money you can make and spend in a lifetime. There are only so many handbags that I can buy and pairs of shoes. Really, I mean, literally. I actually live in an apartment, not a house. So as much as, you know, having money in the bank is great, what I derive great satisfaction out of is employing people who other people wouldn't necessarily employ, and then give them an opportunity to grow. And subsequently, over the years, I've managed to surround myself with an incredible group of people, incredible talent. And what gives me the satisfaction is exactly that. It's surrounding myself with people. And as Signia has grown, I've been able to, you know, employ more and more people and more amazing people. And there are stories behind almost every person. I mean, not every person, obviously, but many of the people I employ. There are stories within stories and within stories in terms of their backgrounds. And that is who I get attracted to. And it gives me enormous amount of satisfaction to be able to work with these people, to see them grow, and literally to be part of their journey. And that is what I define as success. Effectively being able to pass on the lessons, being able to maybe help others, although I sound condescending when I say that, but hire people, give them opportunities, grow them into people that they've become, and then work with them. That's success.
What a journey. What a story. What important life lessons to take from the conversation. I think we'll leave the conversation right there, Magda. Thanks so much for the time and for the insights. That's Magda Virzyska, who is the co-founder and CEO at Signia Asset Management, joining us to reflect on her success in business.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.